The mirror's telling words in motion, by Eli Clare, published by Home and Practice Press, read by Eli Clare, copyright 2007. Part 1, which includes the dedication, acknowledgments, and the author's note, and echoes a preface. The mirror's telling starts with a quote by Ibrahim Barzagi, quote, "Our bodies are no bodies, occupied territory," end quote. And the dedication reads, "To Samuel, Joe, and Sebastian, for your sustenance of many kinds, I can't possibly conjure words enough." Acknowledgements. Without community, this book would simply not exist. For companionship, support, encouragement, and many hours of conversation over the years, a big thank you to Allison Bechtel, Jessica Colinaris, Diana Corvant, Susan Colling, David Dierauer, Patricia Fontaine, Amber Hollibaugh, Joe Cotty, Allison Kafer, Deirdre Kelly, Reva Lair, Harriet Lewis, Samuel Lurie, Annette Marcus, Sebastian Margaret, Adrian Neff, Claire Neff, Hiba Niemer, Sarah Page, Suzanne Farr, Mary Frances Platt, Tova Redwood, Jay Sennett, Skip Sewell, Scott Solick, Eli Trudeau, and Ethan Young. I wouldn't be half the poet I am today without a number of teachers and writing buddies. Bill Beckman, Jan Clausen, Kenley Fries, Jewel Gomez, Joe Cotty, Sara Lev, Nora Mitchell, and Sue Penn all had a hand, directly or indirectly, in shaping the pieces in this book. With brilliance, humor, and patience, Joe Cotty edited this book in its various incarnations over the last 15 years. Jay Sennett and Gwen Hosswood of Home Factors Press stepped forward as publishers extraordinaire and brought it to life. My partner, Samuel Lurie, joked that he became a manuscript widower as I worked long, focused hours at the computer, recited stanzas in the shower, and simply stopped doing my fair share of housework. Nonetheless, he stuck it out, for which I am more than grateful. And finally, I want to acknowledge two activists who, although they never read these poems and prose pieces, greatly impacted this book, my work in general. Alexander John Goodrum, 1960 to 2002. African American, transgender, queer, and disabled, Alexander and I had long conversations about disability and trans identities and how ableism and transphobia intersect. His gentleness and compassion always brought me back to the importance of honoring lived experience, whether it meshed with my politics or not. He cured himself while under suicide watch at a psychiatric hospital. His life strengthened me, and his death haunts me. Heather McAllister, 1968 to 2007. White, queer, femme, fat, and anti-racist activist, founder of Big Burlesque, the original Fat Bottom review. Heather impacted my thinking about bodily difference in profound ways. 8 months before her death of ovarian cancer, she spoke to a gathering of fat dykes, bisexual women, trans folks, and allies at No Losers annual conference. She said, quote, "We can talk about fat liberation until we're blue in the face, but if we don't love our bodies, we will never have it. Our oppression is sighted in our bodies. Our bodies are the direct target of hatred. And so true healing has to include a physical component. And it is ongoing, since fat hatred is ongoing. I want to make a distinction between positive body image as a personal growth phenomenon and fat activism as a radical social movement. They do not have to be separate. In fact, each can only succeed with the other. Surround yourself with fat positive images. Stop reading Cosmo and watching TV. Get naked in front of a full-length mirror. Get a tattoo on the fattest part of your body and show it off. Touch, tattoo, decorate, reveal, show off the fat parts of your body. Have sex naked with the lights on. Swim naked. Eat mindfully and gratefully. Move, sweat, wear comfortable clothing. Lose the girdle." End quote. Heather left such a mark with her commitment to body love and pride as forms of resistance. Alexander and Heather, here's to you, wherever you are now. Author's note: the pieces listed here are in part about child sexual abuse, ritual abuse, and/or torture, and then include graphic but not gratuitous details. As such, they may contain triggers. Please take as much care as you need. These poems are Cleaning Dead Birds, Last Refrain, No Longer Small and Lonely, Psych Ward and Three Voices, Bedrock, Escape, and Stone. Also note that I've changed a few names and identifying details to protect my privacy and the privacy of others. Echoes, a preface. I grew up in the narrow valley. The river and the single expensive hayfield squeezed between steep hills. My siblings and I spent many an hour at the gravel bar, abandoned apple orchard, and milk barn. We were allowed to wander as far as our mother's voice could reach. Before dinner, she'd step out the back door and send a holler rolling through the valley. I started work on the Mara's telling, knowing that history and identity send echoes through our bodies. The reverberations bounce around inside us, sometimes fading into silence, but often lingering, amplified in the body's bellows and chambers. I set out to explore the chaos of these echoes. I poured poems and prose pieces from two decades of writing, seeking not coherence, but complexity. I remembered how a valley carries a morning time holler in one way, and an evening time holler in another. How summer air cradles sound differently from winter air. In the United States, too many of us have been taught to fear or avoid poetry, to feel bored or stupid in its presence. As an activist poet, I want this book to be a door held wide open. Read it like a demonstration, a riot, a late night spray painting action. Laying poem next to poem, I invited contradiction as well as repetition. In the process of revision, I made myself a deal. I could strengthen the language, but not change the story. The poem written 15 years ago about the first Gulf War couldn't morph into being about the current war in Iraq. The story about coming out as a dyke in the backwoods of Oregon had to keep its shape, even though I live today as a genderqueer, a white guy on the streets, not yearning back toward dyke identity, but unwilling to abandon that part of who I've been. I wanted this book to gather and weigh the echoes in the same ways our bodies do. Don't start at the beginning nor finish at the end. Read this book as if it were a roller coaster, a parachute opening above you, a slow, meandering river. We rarely heard her voice, but rather its echoes bouncing back. We'd leave whatever we were doing, our initial reluctance overcome by a desire for food and dry clothes. Race up the hill, hay in our hair, mud smeared on our pants, tracing the echoes back to their source. Don't worry about chronology. At the bottom of each piece, I've left a track, a date, a reference point. The stories in the following pieces range from the damage wreaked by Christian missionaries to a retelling of my birth, from child sexual abuse to disability politics. They emerge from no one source but memory, intimate history, community knowledge, activist thinking, letters of a long-ago white explorer, and the sweep of my imagination today, all intertwined, all somehow connected to the body. Let the six interludes be pauses, exhortations for each of us to tell a tangle of stories, to translate them across chasms and listen hard in our home communities. Allow your own breath to be a single thread winding its way through these pages. In the end, I stand at the crossroads where private and political, public and personal meet. But I don't want to stand here alone. And so, please, join me in chasing echoes down to the marrow, tracing their sources back to a lover's hand, a bully's taunt, a wild blue sky. Written 2007. This is the end of part one. Continue in part two.